Blog Talk Radio.
Fire! Fire!
everybody, no more sleeping in the bed. No more time thinking. The time is to let's fight and get ahead. Welcome to MPH Radio as the voice of MPH Radio on the 16th day of September 2023. We greet you with the theme today, from slavery to sports, prime time and human capital. Yes, we're going to put our spin on this so-called phenomena that is going on right now inside the U.S. around the institution of sports, how one particular African can have such an impact or is having an impact on this whole institution, as well as maybe even this country. We'd like to put our spin on it and fill in our missing pages of history as relates to sports, slavery, and this phenomena that we call prime time. That's going to be our key discussion today. But like always, before we get into our main topic, we're going to talk a little bit about giving you something to think about as it relates to freedom. We're going to give you some MPH, Black Mini Facts. We have a theme. Then we're going to talk about how you can support MPH. And we're going to close out with a message to the community from our brother Alex. That's the agenda today. So at this point in time, we'd like to thank everyone for allowing us to come to their homes this evening and their residence. And we're going to begin starting to fill out our missing pages of history as it relates to slavery and sports. But first and foremost, let us give you something to think about when it comes to this concept of slavery. Slavery is a concept, not slavery, this concept of freedom. Give you something to think about as you come to this, think about this concept of freedom. Freedom is something that we talk about, millions and billions that have died over, but we continue to struggle with ourselves around this whole concept. What is freedom? What it means to be free? So what we want to do is just give you a general definition of this concept of freedom. You tell us how does this definition fit into your concept, and maybe if you can use it. And that definition is, for freedom is, freedom is having the abilities and means to control those necessities for life. Let me repeat that. Freedom is having the abilities and means to control those necessities for life. What you think about that concept? How does that fit into your world today? And at this point in time, like always, we want to educate and inspire our youth. And one of the ways we do this is by sharing with you our history, various contributions that our people have made to humanity. And we do this under the umbrella of MPH Black Mini Facts. At this point in time, we can bring in our sister Susie, who is a member and contributor of MPH Radio and its organization, and she can share with us today something dealing with MPH Black Mini Facts. What information do you have for us today, Susie? Welcome to MPH Radio.
Okay, good evening. Today I'll be sharing just one Black Mini Fact, but it's dealing with a gentleman by the name of Amilcar Cabral, 1924 to 1973. Was born in Guinea-Bissau during the time when the country was under the domination of Portuguese colonialism. He was the architect and undisputed leader of the African Party for the Independence of Guinea and Cape Verde, PAIGC, the organization that led Guinea-Bissau and Cape Verde to independence. And the reason I chose him today, I'll give you a quote because he has well worked with the youth like prime time. And the quote is, "And you, the youth here, must take your responsibilities on your shoulders. You must fully understand the following. If the struggle were to end tomorrow, you should be ready as youth to ensure the work of our people, to build the progress our party wants. But if it were to last 10 more years, you, the youth here, have the duty of taking the place of the older men and women who can no longer carry on and have the duty of preparing other young men and women so that they are trained in time to take up this struggle, unquote. Amilcar Cabral with Guinea-Bissau and Cape Verde. And that's the Black Mini Fact for this Saturday, September the 16th, 2023. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan, for your MPH Black Mini Facts. At this point in time, we're going to take a station break. We're going to play some music with a message. And when we come back, we're going directly to the major topic today, the theme, which is From Slavery to Sports, Prime Time and Human Capital. And we'd like for you to call in and share your thoughts on this discussion and this phenomenon by dialing in at 818-337-0016, hit 1, and we will acknowledge your last four numbers. This is the Voice of MPH Radio, and here's some music with a message.
Inside and long ago, never to walk in anyone's shoes. Tennessee. Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone. I never at once felt so alone. I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire. My guiding force of truth. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee. Country and into more countries, baptized birth into rhythm, where the ghosts of childhood haunt me. Walk the road my forefathers walk, climb the trees my forefathers hung from. Ask those three for all their wisdom. They tell me my ears are so young. Go back to whence you came, my family tree, my family name. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
Down to Holly Springs. Razadon and Baba, they went down to Peachtree. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes!
Now I see the importance of history. While my people be in the mess that they be. Many journeys to freedom made in vain. My brothers on the corner playing ghetto games. I ask you, Lord, why you enlighten me without the enlightenment of all my foes. He said, cause I set myself on a quest for truth, and he was there to quench my thirst. But I am still thirsty. Lord, allow me to drink some more. He said what I am searching for are the answers to all which are in front of me. The ultimate truth started to get blurry. For some strange reason it had to be. It was all a dream about Tennessee.
We'd like to welcome you back to MPH Radio. This is the 16th day of September 2023. We now move to our transition to our major portion of this program as we will have a critical discussion on the theme today, which is From Slavery to Sports, Prime Time and Human Capital. If you don't know by now, we're in the borders of the United States in the sports world. One of the largest narrative and phenomena that is taking place is the impact of one particular former athlete who has now gone to coach in the college ranking of football, and how his presence, his ideas, his behavior, his interrelationship with former players et cetera, is having an impact on this whole institution of sports, particularly in the area of football, as well as in the state of Colorado, which has been known to be one of those states who refused for a long time to give a Martin Luther King holiday, and a state that has been known to have a segment of people who have ideals, who hate Africans based on their skin color, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We also know that historically in this country and probably throughout the world, one of the tools of oppression that the system has used universally is to use sports as a cover-up or as a misdirection when things are going bad, particularly for African people, and become a tool of deception. This is what's taking place today as we look at this issue of this prime time phenomenon. Let's talk a little bit about the relationship between sports and slavery. What is that relationship? Is there a narrative, a commonality between the two? And how is the art being viewed, and from whom, and by what perspective? Is he being perceived or being used as a tool of human capital? Where they use him as a means to make billions and billions of dollars off of him, where he is receiving very little? This is the kind of critical discussion we like to have today and have a different focus on the narrative. As you talk to the brothers on the streets, they may ask you, are we falling for the okey-doke? Are we falling for the okey-doke? When African people have been slaughtered down by institutionalized police forces, when they are again in the mode of being denied access to education, when we still are on the bottom economic line when it comes to income distribution and wealth, when we still are non-existent in the healthcare industry and all the industries that are important for people's survival and be self-sufficient, are we getting played again while they're getting paid? It was just reported the other day, the first game since Deion Sanders has gone to the University of Colorado, and they played that first football game 2 weeks ago. I believe they netted over $18 million just from football tickets alone. Now they count the other avenues in which millions of dollars are coming in, all because of him and his influence. So let's talk about the positives and the negatives, but more importantly, let's look at the major issue of how is this game being played and are we being played? So my first question to my co-analysts and the rest of my participants today and callers, I'd like to hear perspective from you on the issue of, is this whole phenomenon a deception? Are we getting played again while we're making wealth for those who historically and continually have oppressed and don't have their interests as high as the African community? Are we getting played again while they are getting paid? Deion Sanders is bringing in millions and billions of dollars now to a university that has no real respect and interest for the African community and African people. Did he make the right choice to go there at the expense of leaving the historical black community, black historical African college, Jackson State? So let's just have a discussion on what's really taking place so we can see more clearly to not only what's going on, but how we can create a roadmap to map ourselves towards and stand on the path of liberation for our people. So my first question to everybody today, is this whole phenomenon dealing with Deion Sanders and the Colorado phenomenon, is this a deception? Is this a deception? And there are bigger things for us to be looking at as it relates to our people's suffering and liberation. So Brother Alex, I can let you start us off. give me your perspective, and we'll move on to the rest of the callers who have been waiting very patiently to have this discourse with us today. Brother Alex, is this a deception, or is something bigger than that? Your response, Brother Alex.
Well, first of all, Mr. Lee, I will appreciate for giving this opportunity to be on the show again with you and with our panel of guests. It is always a wonderful time to think about things and to talk about things that go beyond our barbershop talk. Because if we notice, you know, this is a conversation that grows in the barbershop and reaches social media. And it also turns to the gambling institutions on who to bet on, sports fantasy, as they call it now. So as we today share our insights, I want us all to think about, you know, the comments we're going to make, because we're talking about, you know, a future of a young man that we have to support his ideas and his choices. And I say we support him because of what he can bring to the table. You know, there was one incident that someone said, well, if we don't have a seat, bring our own chair. Did Dion bring his own chair? I would like to say that not only did Dion bring his chair, he brought a recliner. He came with style. He came with poise. He came with discipline. He came with who he is, not to be told and not to be controlled, not to be looked at, not to be criticized, and not be able to take the heat from it, because he knew it was coming. He was coming from us as well as it was coming from the other side. We were going to criticize him even more so because he abandoned his own. Well, when we look at what he was trying to do at his own university, and he was being met headstrong with a lot of things that he wanted to do, because basically he was told, like most African Americans are told, whether they on the white side or the black side, you're moving too fast. Yep, you're moving too fast. That's a comment you hear all the time as an African American. They want you to hold back. They want you to stay on the bottom. They don't want you to move ahead of the rest. There was jealousy among his own in the HBCUs, so he didn't have full support there. Upon moving and leaving, yes, he did see a bigger slice of the pie, and he went all for it, all in. Now, every move by every man won't be considered right. Every move by every man will be looked upon and judged by others. Until we know the outcome of this season and perhaps a few more, then we can really sit back and evaluate what's going on. But right now, just a couple games into the season, it is hard to say. But first of all, he has made me a believer. Because I was one of the ones that doubted his ability to coach. I didn't see it in him. And I would say I didn't see it in him because I thought he was a flash on Sundays, talking trash on Mondays, and probably had no substance in practice on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. But Prime was ready on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So in looking at where he approached the job and what he could offer to the young men that came into the program, building the coaching staff was so important. We talk about what he did, getting rid of players and this and that and using the portal. Hey, the NFL used it all the time. Trade and draft, get the best players possible. Why not? They shouldn't do it in college. You want to put the best team you can put on the field. But team also means that you have a bunch of individuals who have to step up because there are plays that have to be made. And if you have a timid individual that don't fill a gap, that don't make a tackle, that don't cover well, then the other team is going to run the score up on you. So, in having players that are disciplined, that are hungry, that want to play, that want to be on that national stage, that's an insight that most coaches cannot give because they have not played in the NFL. So with Coach's Prime's links to the NFL and coach's staff that he's hired from the NFL gives him a slight advantage in a lot of young kids' minds. And they believe now, and they all in. And that's what you have to have in any good coach, is your players to believe in you, because that reflects on you believing in yourself coming on that field. Because we're talking about young 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds, very youthful mind, trying to make something of a career. And as Dion said, most of them will not make it to the NFL. But if they can succeed going back to their own neighborhoods and helping their own communities and being successful citizens, then he's really won. And that's where I think we should be focused on. Not how much knowledge Dion has in coaching and winning, but how much knowledge he has in giving these young men that won't make it on the big grand scale, where they can give back in their own personal lives, their own family, and build good men that don't go to prison, that are not on drugs, and not a fall away in life. So I commend Prime for all he's doing, and I can't wait to listen to all the other comments, because he's got a long way to go. This is just the beginning. Three games in now. This is just the beginning. And like I say, I'm going to ride that Prime wave as far as I can. And I turn it back over to you guys.
Thank you, Alex. Next, we're going to call 6029. Call 6029. The question is this a big distraction? Are we going to play and then deceive and not look at the real picture of the conditions of African people? You know, many times when the media take on stories and take on narratives, they have that set of objectives too. Why is this getting so much shine? Well, maybe more important things as it affecting things that affect the African community on that. What's your take, caller? Are we can play? Is this a question of deception? Let me hear your thoughts, caller 6029. That Dion's prime time impact.
Yes, of course it's a distraction. Let us be very, very clear. You know, historically, when we talk about all forms of entertainment, it's designed specifically to be a distraction. One of the very sad ironies is that when we focus on distraction, it sort of reinforces this notion in terms of, you know, African people's capabilities. In other words, normally when we talk about African people, we normally talk about within the context of physical prowess. We never talk about African people in terms of intellect. And so therefore, we got people focusing on this Deion Sanders, and the implication is very, very clear. By focusing on Deion Sanders, then it creates perception that in order to be successful as a young African child, then the best your best avenue in terms of being successful is to hopefully, you know, one day becoming, you know, a major football star or big time coach in the college ranks. I think it's a very, very, very destructive message to send. I think one of the things that we as a people, particularly the adults in the community, we have to stop embracing this notion that, you know, that that sports is a be in all, you know, of our existence. One of the things in here in Richmond now I find very, very ironic is that there are big signs at the youth centers and you know, analyzing Kobe Bryant. There's nothing wrong in terms of analyzing Kobe Bryant as a basketball player. But the problem is that the kind of problems that we're confronted with as a people are much more complex than someone dribbling a basketball or running down a field or hitting a ball. Our problem is much more complex. And I think one of the things we do a disservice to our young people when we inadvertently condition them to believe that our only worth is equated to our ability you know, to play sports. I think we should do a better job in terms of highlighting those things, those academic pursuits, or the academic individuals in the African community who should be a shining example in terms of what our children can be, and then to move to create the conditions in our community to reinforce this notion that our kids can be anything they want to be if they simply apply themselves. But I think to answer your question, brother, you're absolutely correct. This whole thing around sports is all a distraction. Entertainment is a distraction. They spend billions of dollars specifically for the distraction. And when you start talking about, you know, Deion Sanders being at Colorado State University, the bottom line is that that's not going to translate anything meaningful in terms of lives of African people. But what it will do is distract African people from the day-to-day challenges that we must confront. And certainly the challenges that we confront are not going to be resolved by our ability, you know, to run, you know, down the football field. It's going to be resolved by our ability to intellectually understand what it is that we're up against, to create the conditions to fight what we're up against, and to work together in terms of bringing about the world in which we like to see. In that regard, you know, this all talk about Deion Sanders is a mere distraction, which I don't concern myself with, and I'll close with that.
Thank you, caller. We'll put you on hold. We'll continue to have this critical discussion by going to caller 6057. Caller 6057, you've been listening to the discussion. What is your position? Is this a distraction? Is this an issue where the African communities can play while other people use them to get paid? Talk to us about prime time and its impact that it is having at this point in time on our community from your perspective. Call us 6057. The mic is yours.
Thanks for having me, brother. Let's see. In my view, it is a distraction. Because it's the case of Africans getting played while, you know, Europeans make money off of our exploitation. The connection between slavery and sports is that during child slavery, let's see, Africans were used as a source of entertainment, you know, to appease the European slave owners at that time. Just as football today is used as a source of entertainment for the European bourgeoisie. We're getting played while entertainment distracts us from the larger issues that affect our community, like alleviating our oppression and getting free from racism and exploitation. So I see this as a distraction. Granted, Deion is to be commended for his success, in his career, and I think he should be, deserves praise for that, And also, I think, it shows that we have the intellect to control the game, just as other people do. It's just that we're not able to show that very often. And again, it's because of the larger issues cover the human beings as a cover for oppression, that we cannot see the bigger picture. And so I think in this sense, Deion Sanders, it is a distraction in the sense that, you know, we, you know, uh, you know, we, you know, the bigger issues out here, you know, the killings and our oppression, that we're not we're turning a blind eye to because of this distraction.
Thank you, caller. We're going to come back to you later as we continue to discuss this issue, Prime Time Phenomena. Caller, 7236. You've been listening to this conversation. From your perspective, is this a distraction or is something bigger than that? Call your response, 7236.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Not only is it is a distraction, it's a great distraction. Plus, not only is it a distraction, it is a, in addition to being a distraction, it also is a form of intellectual manipulation that impacts our community as Africans substantially. It is almost a form of brainwashing or intellectual manipulation in addition to being it's that greater distraction.
Thank you, caller. We'll go to caller 4298. Caller 4298, talk to us.
Thank you, Brother Lee. This is Brother Moses. I think, you know, as a subject of topic for today or whatever, I thought it was the last thing on my mind, to tell you the truth. But as interesting information, I mean, all news is good news. I mean, in the sense of, you know, Prime Time deserves his flowers while he's alive, and so that's good to recognize his accomplishment. However, the whole ball game is not. I mean, I don't know. I just haven't been following it, I guess. I mean, maybe that's just me and my interest, but. The UAW workers' strike right now, certainly that's something that class struggle is going on, and we have to recognize that they represent the working class right now. And so, you know, that's something that we could be into. But anyway, I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, caller. And we come to our contributor, Sister Susan Miller. We'd like to get her thoughts. This is who you've been listening so far. Share your thoughts on this subject today. Is this a great distraction or not? Talk to us, Susan.
Okay. Yes, I think it is a distraction. But one thing, sometimes distractions can lead to a positive action. And the reason I'm saying that, because you got these young kids going through just their discipline and the changing their characters and everything and producing like they are doing for Deion Sanders. Some of them, a lot of them probably thinking they're going to make pro and they may not, but you probably have some that may finally see things for what it is, because if you have somebody like Deion come in and give them the advice, he's able to relate to them, he believes in them, he cares about them, and this and that, they can begin to see the world in a different light from that football field. So therefore, in a sense, I say a distraction, but then in a sense not, because it could end up being positive. Because with Deion being a motivator and a marketer and stuff like this, and you got kids sitting and looking at them, someone may finally realize that we need to make a change for ourselves, and they may go out there and work toward that. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Susan. You're listening to MPH Radio. We're discussing the phenomenon of Deion Sanders and its impact on the NCAA arena and area sports. in the particular sport, we talk about football. And our theme today is From Slavery to Sports, Prime Time and Human Capital. Brother Alex, I'm coming back to you, and as a, you know, as an entrepreneur, a businessman, a historian, a community leader, you name it, you wear many hats and you wear very well. I would like to hear your thoughts and others on this question of looking at the institution of slavery and its parallels to sports. It seems to be sometimes avenues are created just to direct a group of people or to limit a group of people in their forms of participation in the society. That's to say, they create jobs, create industries, and they have dedicated certain industries and institutions for us, such as one time they define us and treat us like as we are enslaved, we were enslaved people. Then they changed the form of it and created a different form of our participation by creating the concepts of workers. Instead of saying you're no longer a slave, they change the form and say you're a worker. Sometimes they get rid of the word workers and they say, well, you're no longer a worker. We're going to make you an athlete. You're a sports. You're an athlete. You're a great athlete. But the hidden message behind all of these are they are tools to enrich the wealthy and the powerful. That's a change of sports you and you don't get your value. So can you speak a little bit to Brother Alex from your perspective? Is there a parallel, you see, a relationship between slavery and sports today, Brother Alex?
Well, yes, there is, Mr. Lee. And, you know, we got to remember that well before this country was founded, athletes, as some may call them, some we used to call them heroes of old. Some of them used to call them gladiators. Some of them used to call them Olympians. So there have been many names for men who went out and were the strongest, fastest, could wrestle, box, played stickball, and different things. And these were considered your athletes, and they represented, you know, their countries, their cities. We'll start with, say, their local neighborhoods, and then their cities, and then their maybe states and governments. So you had people for a long time doing this. And let's not forget that many of these were called indentured servants at one point. And then they were called, you know, the enslaved, where they were bound into bondage. And again, as some men have called themselves free as they moved into the worker, because you're not free when you're working for someone else for a wage that does not pay you worth anything. As one of our callers said, you know, while the UAW is striking, the writers are striking. And if you've ever been involved with a strike, I can tell you it's not a pretty picture, but the outcome is what you want to, you know, accomplish and to win and negotiate stuff. And especially as a business owner. So I've always negotiated with my employees and people and found out what was fair to them, because I know the system itself is not fair. And in this course of human development, we have always approached it through a wager or a gamble or an odds. And that is where the money is made. And so when we're talking about from maybe hundreds of dollars to thousands to millions and now billions, one of the most important things I found out that Dion talked about was, hey, being a coach is nothing. That's the most talked about position you could ever have, is being a coach, because you can be let go at any time. Your contract can be bought out, or you can switch, or you can retire. There's so many things to get rid of that coaching position. So that doesn't mean a lot, being a coach. You're just there to represent the here and now, but you can be easily replaced. But you have to have someone that believes in you and have faith in you, and that's called a team. But beyond the team, you got to have ownership. And that ownership is spending money. or making money off of you, one or the other. So if you taking them to the red, you ain't going to be around a long time. But if you're taking them into the black, like Mr. Saunders is doing right now, oh, there's a lot of happy faces beyond Denver, Colorado, and Boulder. So we have to look at what he is bringing to the program, and not only him, but all black athletes that bring to the program, because it's the owners that get fed the money, the investors, the stockholders. When we look at one black baseball co-owner, one basketball co-owner, and there are none in football, and there are none in any of the other major sports, soccer and the rest in the United States. So when we look at where we have not made our investment into ownership, because that's where the real money and the real conversation needs to be made, is ownership. That's where the billions of dollars go. That's what goes back into the community or takes from the community, as homeowners pay higher prices for these stadiums to be built. So it's not always the ticket sales and the online betting and different things like that. Our schools, roads, and communities have never seen that money. But investors and stockholders and the others continue to get rich, billions upon billions upon billions of dollars, as teams or players are sold and traded and coaches are switched out left and right. So our real conversation today is, what do these owners of these teams and even these schools, these major universities, what do they put back into the community? What do they give to these athletes? You know, you got maybe, what, three, four, five, six good years to be the number one thing on the team, and then you'll be replaced by somebody bigger, stronger, faster. So longevity is not a thing in sports. It's, again, a here and now thing. Because next week, you won't be the top running back. You won't be the best basketball player. Longevity in any sports is an amazing thing that any athlete can carry. His legacy, such as Jordan's today, with shoe brands and everything else. I still like Mike. Not everything that Mike done, not everything that Mike stood for, but I still like Mike's attitude about the game and how he played it. And with that kind of spirit, determination to win in a championship, there was nobody like Mike. Like Ali, a fighter that believed in himself first, fans second, and also he respected the other fighter. But he put on another face just to sell tickets. You know, there are so many elements to sports that we don't see and can't recognize. That when Mike Tyson was in the ring and he was knocking out people left and right, and then once he got knocked off of his pedestal, people began to doubt Mike. Mike doubted himself. And we know the history from there. Once we lose confidence in ourselves, then we can be taken down by anybody. So, yes, we have to be built up as athletes and understand that is more than just us. That this is a time to give back and start making mentorships in our own communities. And we should start building our own organizations of sports and having our own franchises and having our own people come forth and do things. That's what lies on the road ahead. And again, I give it back to you, Mr. Lee.
Thank you, Alex. We go back to caller 6029, caller 6029. As we look at this question of slavery in relationship to sports, it has so many things that parallel. And I'd like for you to articulate your thought, brother, caller 6029, on this relationship between slavery was an economic institution used to benefit the overall capitalist system and those with wealth. And look at how sports is used today, particularly when you're talking about African athletes, and looking at how they use the prime time, seems like nothing has been changed. For example, it has been reported that since he came to the University of Colorado, a team that had very few people in the stands, a team where nobody wanted to associate with, a team that was 1-11 last year, that by him coming to the University of Colorado, now they go from a budget of very little money to creating different kind of revenue sources from TV, from advertising, from traveling tours, the people coming there. I mean, you name it. You talk about billions of dollars he's now raising and the institution of football is making solely for most of the money going to go to students who does not come from his community. Here you have African generating huge wealth of money again, but that wealth will have very little relationship to the African community. Your critique on that phenomenon, brother, call it 6029. Slavery in sports, it seems to be reducing the same thing that it always has produced. That's generating money and wealth for those in power and those who have oppressed our communities and people. Your articulation on that particular concept, call it 6029.
Yeah, well, essentially what you're saying is an indictment of capitalism. Capitalism exists for the purpose of exploitation. In other words, as long as economic feasible, concerning exploitation is also feasible. And so in that context, when we talk about terms of overall treatment of African people in terms of the exploitation that practices against African people, it's simply a change in form. And so one of the things you've got to understand that even though Deion Sanders had the opportunity to go to a big university in terms of coaching, keep in mind that the benefits of him coming to the university far outweigh any other concerns. I think in the context of, let's say, if Deion Sanders were to take that same money that he's making at Colorado University to invest in the African community there in Colorado, in the state of Colorado, then what would the repercussions be? What would the response be from those same people who hired him as a coach? And so one of the things I think we have to begin to understand is that when we talk about, you know, the self-conscious and we talk about the unconscious, it's important we understand that when we talk about this trend in terms of, you know, how African people are treated, that we're treated as somehow, A, less than human beings. Certainly we're treated as we're disposable. We're treated as esoteric, or we're treated as certainly unimportant. In that context, we understand that from an unconscious point of view, that this drive that exists in the minds of people who are very powerful in society, those elements don't dissipate. They don't disappear. They just express themselves in a different way. And so when we talk about in terms of giving him the opportunity to actually coach, then we understand the people who support understand his ability to coach is going to benefit them immensely. They're not doing it because they're altruistic or they care about African people. They're not doing it because they care about Deion Sanders. They're not doing it because they care about the students who play football at the University of Colorado. They're doing it because it serves their interests. And so when we go back in history and look at terms of interest, I mean, when we look at terms of the powerful interest in terms of, you know, the use of African people when it comes to commerce, they will understand that if it doesn't benefit them directly, then there's simply no use for African people. In that context, Deion Sanders has to understand that he is a commodity. And that's a commodity of capitalism. Understand that you're going to be used, and it's just a fact of life. But the question is, how do you remedy that situation? If, in fact, you simply take the money and run, then you do the African community no service. But if you use those funds in terms of an empowerment of African people, you can sort of negate a bad, a wrong. And so this is the thing that is so important in terms of a psychological perspective. I think a lot of us have a very difficult time understanding that when we talk about terms of tenets of capitalism, in terms of the potential to exploit one another, when we talk about this potential, a lot of us don't understand that the potential to do so takes different forms. It doesn't. It's not static. It's changing. The form changes, and so therefore, how the exploitation manifests itself differs from time to time. What we have to start thinking about in terms of what is in our self interest. We cannot reasonably think about what is in our self interest unless first and foremost we understand definitively that we're up against a system that diametrically opposed to the existence of African people. If we can't fundamentally understand that, then we can never grasp the complexity in terms of the psychological mindset that's creating these conditions that abuses and uses the African people for the benefits of the power structure. So I think that Deion Sanders does do some good in the sense that, you know, I like the fact that he tells young people, listen, the reality is that this is a war that you're fighting, and that how you present yourself, the ideas that you carry with you, your interaction with your fellow man, you know, is key in terms of your survival. I like the fact that he reiterates that. That's good. But more and more importantly, I think we have to create the conditions, which has to come from community, which reinforces this notion in terms of self-determination. In other words, we have to definitively understand or believe that we have a right to exist. Otherwise, if we don't believe that we have a right to exist, we start internalizing, which are justifying or rationalizing the kind of abhorrent treatment that African people receive under the guise that we have to participate within the context of the system. That notion that we have to participate in the guise or at least the tenets established by the system is something that has to be fundamentally rejected by our people. If we don't consciously reject that premise, then my biggest concern is that, you know, we acquiesce to a system which is diametrically opposed to our survival, and we in turn internalize behaviors and attitudes which are also diametrically opposed to the interests of our own communities. So clearly, I think that the question that you raise is unique to capitalism. And so one of the things we have to understand, because it's unique to capitalism, understand that, you know, if we don't struggle to bring about a new paradigm, the reality is that this propensity to export African people is not going anywhere. We simply got to understand the nature of exploitation and how we move to minimize, ultimately to destroy that exploitation. And I close with that.
Thank you, Carlo. You raised the issue, and I can raise this issue with my next caller in terms of how we are perceived, how Deion Sanders are perceived, or how he is perceived. And I believe we can say we are viewing them and treating them as a human capital. We are perceived as a tool to make wealth for the University of Colorado. Directly, the state indirectly, and the country broadly speaking. There are so many financial screens that he is having a positive impact. One would have to ask, is he getting his true value based upon the contractual agreement that he has made with the university? For example, it's my understanding that I think at best he's getting less than $10 million a year. But yet, as of today, he has already brought over $100 million to that industry, to that university, to that region. So the trade-off is his value in terms of what he has produced, over $100 million, versus then he gets less than $10 million out of the $100 million. Is that a fair exchange? And also the question becomes, for all of those who benefit from his revenue, should the University of Colorado have responsibility to direct some of that resources or many of that resources, a certain percentage, to those communities, the African communities who have been locked out or not having access to wealth, not having access to a higher level of learning in the field of education, et cetera? Your response, call us 6057, 6057, your response.
Yes, he is. Deion Sanders is being used by capitalist forces in Colorado and throughout the U.S. to make money. I agree with you. Colorado should be doing more for the African community, the community it underserves. Let's see, this is where the larger issue comes into play. We our labor is exploited because we're disorganized as a people. And only with a better organization and political education will we be able to demand what is rightfully ours. And it takes organization to do that. And right now, we don't have that. And that's one of the factors of how Africans get used to make money for these corporations, these universities, and other entities without getting paid in return. We have to get better organized to bring an end to this. And capitalism is not in our best interest. We have to understand that. That this charade that goes on is a form of capital making more money by exploiting human capital in the form of Deion Sanders and other African athletes.
Thank you, caller. We'll move to caller 7236. Caller 7236. We hear the media narratives and the questions that they are asking about this phenomenon. Are there any issues or questions you think that need to be raised or asked that are not being asked? Call us 7236. Your response. 7236.
And what was your question?
Are there any issues or questions that are not being raised as to deal with this phenomenon, Deion Sanders and this generation of wealth he is making for these institutions? When we look at the media, they set the tone. They ask the questions. But are there any questions or issues that should be raised that they are not raising that you would like to raise?
But as a 56-year-old former football player that started out in Atlanta, it's interesting that he's in Colorado now at a university, and he's the issue of him being one or the only one and that kind of thing really needs to be examined. And as the other callers and you yourself have mentioned, the amount of money that he's generating for the university, for the networks, just for the media, because he's created a whole, it's a whole phenomena, just for the industry. And the industry is not just the university and the income that it receives. It's the uniforms, the kids wearing the shirts, and this kind of thing. Those questions aren't really being, I mean, that isn't really being discussed or looked at. And the other thing Sister Susie said was maybe the children will somehow find wealth or value in themselves in other ways. And I certainly hope when he's visiting the schools, someone should help prepare an agenda for him where he addresses the issue of education, of being a scientist, bringing up Carter G. Woodson and his writers and the W.D. Du Bois and the Ida B. Wells and the Dr. Francis Scott Weldon, and brings up those people because it's so very important that they get a perspective far beyond just sports. And what is the minority ratio? How many Africans attend the University of Colorado right now? And what is their history in terms of educating African-American children and African people in general? I think those are questions that aren't being raised and aren't being looked at, and I'd like to know some of those statistics.
Thank you, Carla. We go to Susie. Susie, are there any questions or concerns that you would like to raise that you don't feel the media and other people talking about that would be more important to the development and well-being of our people? Any thoughts on that, Susie?
The only thing is you read a lot about the art and everything, but when it really comes to the community, he haven't really expressed what he's actually doing out in the community. You know what he's doing as far as recruitment and things for the university and this kind of thing, but it would be nice to really hear that he's doing this extra for the community. Even in Colorado, I can imagine there's probably a large section that's forgotten forever in Colorado. But that's the only thing I can say about Dion. Like him, I think he's doing a great job and everything with the team, but it would be nice to hear him to express what he's doing outside of that football unit.
That's it. Thank you, Susan. Brother Moses, any further thoughts you'd like to share with us on the subject matter? Brother Moses?
Thank you, Brother Lee. I think, you know, that a lot's been said that I agree with. Basically, you know, he's a paid employee in a wage slave system, no less. Just like Obama was a paid employee in a wage slave system, and he's preserving the system is at all costs is what the presidency demands. And so, you know, there's certain things that are demanded of a coach of a Colorado, and you know, if you're going to be in that sphere, there's certain rules and regulations you're gonna have to adhere to. It's a political economy, and you know, we're trying to bring political consciousness to the economy, and so that we're not just automatons or robots, but that we're conscious beings aware of our conditions. And as wage slaves in a wage slave system, we don't demand just a higher wage for wage slaves. UAW is on the struggle for a higher wage for wage slaves, but we have to demand into the wage slave system itself. We need free education paid for by the government. We need free health care paid for by the government. We need leadership that respects the world's people, and that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And certainly we began with the Israeli war machine. But anyway, there's a lot of problems in the world. The question is, what is the solution? What is the solution? And that we're talking about revolution is the only solution. Otherwise, we're going to see the same problems propping up until you cure it. Thank you.
Thank you, caller 4298. Brother Alex, I'd like to have your response to this scenario. And it is, many times in life, you don't choose the history. History chooses you. Now, given the fact that I've stated that, is this a time, a good time, a good situation where we can raise the issue, where Dion can raise the issue, where Dion can be the agent to help bring about further positive change for oppressive communities and African communities in the state of Colorado and particularly at the university by having them to address the need for more African students who are assessed to attend their university and get an education, i.e. a free education, if possible, and I think it is possible, or many scholarships. He can be used as an agent to raise the issue of more African faculties to have access to higher positions at the university. He can raise the issues of better working conditions and employment for those workers at the bottom receiving subsistence wages. He can raise the issue of more Africans in the upper leadership of running the university. Again, sometimes history chooses you. You don't choose history. Is this a good time to raise those issues and actually be a catalyst as it relates to the interests of our people? Because after all, Dion did not create himself. It was the people's struggles that allowed him to be who he is today. Your response, Alex.
Well, Mr. Lee, again, you brought up some points there that if you look at all the YouTube things that are out there, and especially ones that I'm so glad that you gifted me with, but they're even more out there because there's so much to talk about this one individual. We've known Deion Sanders for years, and he was a self-marketing, you know, individual coming out of high school in the beginning, you know, and like he said, he wanted to be the highest paid defensive back in the NFL. He wanted to play two sports. When a person wants something, it's almost impossible to stop them because you got to have the heart and you have to have the intellect and you have to have the talent and you have to be humble to God. You know, when he mentioned he didn't drink or he didn't smoke, you know, I thought about, you know, myself, you know, and not even curse, you know, I try to refrain from that, you know, and even in the midst of all anger that I could ever have against someone, I loved it when he said, you have to think about family and you have to think about love. Think about building bridges and lifting people up. You know, that was what his life, you know, was about and what his mama taught him. See, a lot of us have forgotten what our mamas have taught us. And we go into life with our own perception of who we are and what we should accomplish. Our mothers have never held us back. They nurtured us, cared for us, loved us, treated us when we were sick. But they gave us an opportunity to grow on our own. And once we got kicked out the nest and finally left, we saw life as it truly was. We cannot stand here and say, you know, Dion will be an agent or be something for all African Americans to aspire for to make sure that he becomes a leader because that's not him. That is not what his calling has been. His calling has always been for himself. But along the way of him being him, he has always looked out and sought to teach someone else and to express his own views that I need to be paid more for the job I do. If I'm going to be the servant to someone else, then I need more money. I need to be paid. That's the main thing about Dion over the years. I've almost, in every video, he wants to be paid, P-A-I-D. He wants that check. It's not that he wants to help his race of people get from A to B to C to D. He wants to get paid. Now, if he can take some people along with him, he's all for it. But I don't think that he individually would try and do but so much because he is involved in the capitalist system just like so many other athletes are. But when he was at Jackson State, he tried to encourage them to move forward and realize the finances that they were being given, the profits that could be made from every game they played. But a lot of that fell on deaf ears because they could not see that far into the future. They didn't understand fiscal responsibility of a university, how much revenue can be brought in as he's bringing in at Colorado. And if we can remember, he was brought in, and they didn't even have the money to pay him. You know, how many universities will take a chance on someone and do not even have the money to pay you. So when we're talking about gambles and gambling, because that's what sports is all about and always been, is about a gamble, because people bet every day. The university was betting that he would come in because of who he was. They took a chance, not about what he was going to do or how many blacks he was going to have on staff and how many teachers he was going to request be hired and how many concession workers or whatever would be in the stadium. He wasn't concerned about that. He was first concerned about himself. And when that university said that they would go forward and hire him without the money, taking a chance, then that told me that that is almost a roadmap for so many other quality black coaches, not only in HBCU ranks, but ones at the professional level who have been denied a job or whatever, but maybe to come back to the college ranks, because there are many Deion Sanders out there, just like there are Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jacksons out there. There are plenty of them out there. And Prime is not, you know, we're getting concerned on him today. But please believe me, there are many good black coaches out there who have not been given the opportunity to go forward because no one was betting on them. But I bet on black, as Deion said. I bet on black. And when you bet on yourself, you can accomplish some great things. But we first have to bet on each other. And if we bet on each other, then we can bet to move forward. Because, yes, I think it was one of his things that he stated that say, hey, not only do I want to see more black fans up in the stands, but I want to see more black teachers. You know, I want to see more black homeowners here. I want to see more black businesses here. I want to see more black vendors here. See, everything he was saying he wanted to see more of. So not that he was going to incorporate it, but it's something he wanted us to realize that it was possible, that I may not lead you there, but you should be able to take yourself there. But again, you know, we're in a society that's, you know, capitalism that is totally against us, and it's an ever going war to fight every day as a business owner, as black and business owner, for over 20-some years. This has been a war, you know, for me every day to go out there in business and to talk to anyone on the other side. But thank God that I have been successful as a negotiator. I never wanted to be the leader to bring every black business into business. But the black businesses that aspire to be there, black businesses that are holding on or whatever, I have an olive branch leap out to them to help them in any way that I can so that they can be successful. And I believe that is the way, you know, Deion, you know, feels the same way. He wants his people as a success. He knows he can't do it by himself, but he needs us and he needs our support, because that's how you open up the door. We have to support each other. We can't tear each other down. There's enough of that coming from the other side. So as long as we continue to build each other up, we can move forward. But as long as we try and hold each other back and pull each other back, then we get nowhere. But in the meantime, we have to make sure that our children have a place at the table. And if not, make it on the table. You know, that this society does not have to be run one-sided. Not at all. When we look in out and to the communities and we see the Latino community moving in, we see the Asian community moving in, we see every other community coming in and being successful at many things. So we have to sometimes shoulder some of that blame ourselves and say we have to support each other, just like this radio station. We have to support you, Mr. Lee. We can't turn our backs on you. We can't say why you're not big as this or not big as that if we're not supporting you. So it's the same idea that we have to realize. We have to support each other. And in that support, we grow. But we dissolve without support. And I turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Alex. And Alex, some of the things you just stated or said, I'd like to respond to. I am agreeing with you in terms of not to tear each other down. But we also have responsibility collectively to make sure we hold each other individually responsible. Now, when I look at this phenomenon dealing with prime time and its impact in the institution of sports, it reminds me of another trick that they continue to use us and control us and keep us divided by making us think that we are a great man or a great person individually, and therefore our responsibility is only just to ourselves. And I think this is a good scenario, a good case where we need to highlight, talk about, and even weigh in with Dion, or reminding him that this opportunity that he got, this position that he's in, is not a position because he arrived at it as an individual. He got it as a collective struggle by his people that created this scenario. So therefore, even though things that you acquire or perceive as acquire as an individual, it's not all yours. It also must have, it has a relationship and responsibility to his people to make sure those resources are used in a way where it helps bring up the group and not just an individual. I think this offers us a good chance, opportunity, and responsibility to remind all of us, as particularly beyond, because you're right. You only can be as strong as the group make them, and that's our responsibility. If he's weak, it's because we're weak. We made him weak. If he's strong, it's because we made him strong. So this is one of the lessons, I think, that we need to look at and remind ourselves of not to fall in the trap, allowing these structures, these institutions, to make us think we are a great man, an individual, therefore the wealth totally belongs to us, and don't understand the connection and historical responsibility that the people created and made this all possible for all of us to be what we are today. So then, in fact, I said that little two-piece note, this little bit of that little commentary, what I would like to do is go to caller 6029, caller 6029, and I was going to actually speak about the issue of the balancing act between the role and in the role and the collective, how there's a responsibility for individuals. We have a responsibility to the community, to their people, and the community as well have responsibility to the individual. Can you speak on that phenomenon in terms of creating a healthy condition where we cannot continue to be used and played by other forces and people? Your thoughts, call them 6029.
Well, You raise a very interesting paradox. Those questions you raise are philosophical in nature. And the problem in terms of course, is when you talk about the problem related to philosophy, is that oftentimes, you know, philosophy, it requires great thought. And in that context, in terms of, you know, arriving at, you know, at a position in which you can appreciate great thought, takes collective discussion. One of the things that we don't have in African community is this kind of supporiums, where we actually sit down and discuss very complex kinds of issues for various reasons. But the mere fact that we don't have these kind of discussions on a much more intellectual level makes our philosophical understanding of the conditions that we're confronted with that much more difficult to comprehend. And so that is the problem. I think one of the things, the individualism that you alluded to is very, very real in African community. We really believe that, in fact, that, you know, that your wealth is a result, you know, single-handedly, unilaterally, creating the conditions to make such possible. We're not understanding the long, complex struggles that made it possible for you to be in a position in the first place. We're taught not to even think in those terms. We're taught to think in capitalistic terms. And so we don't see a relationship between, you know, our success and it suffers, the suffering, or the sacrifices African people made in order for you to arrive at that position. So again, we have to have little philosophical discussions in terms of bringing some kind of clarity in terms of that relationship between, you know, the potential to rise in society and the role that the masses play in terms of creating conditions to make that rise possible in the first place. But those are all philosophical questions. I think one of the things when you talk about in the context of business and you talk about people who are individualistic, when they make the money, the position is that, you know, well, I made this money because I'm diligent and hardworking. Well, the problem is that when you confront such individuals in terms of, listen, why don't you use those proceeds in terms of trying to empower the community? The likely response is that, well, listen, I'm not beholden to this community, you know, because they're not responsible for my success. In that context, they don't necessarily see the relationship between the need in terms of a collective community and their own survival. They think unilaterally they can do it on their own. But I think we have to begin to understand that collectively, in order to survive in this capitalist society, if we don't create a means by which we collectively understand the struggles that we're up against, then we seek to bring about change individually, or we seek to not bring change at all. But either way, by being objectively opposed to any kind of change in society, we do so at a disservice to our own existence in this country. And this is the fundamental problem that we're confronted with. So again, brother, these are all philosophical questions. And to the extent that, you know, we can provide some clarity in terms of why the collective is so important in the context of, the problems that African people have to endure day in and day out, unless we can fundamentally understand the collective response to those problems, then it's very, very clear. Individual response is not going to resolve the problems that we're confronted with. It takes a collective response. And I'll say this and conclude. One of the things we talk about in terms of the value system of our children, we cannot be surprised that our children internalize individualism, and when they kill and destroy each other, or when they sell narcotics to each other under guise of getting paid, when they do so because they live in a system which justifies the exploitation of other human beings. In that context, they have no realization, you know, that by you destroying your own community, you undermine your own long-term, your own longevity in the society. They have no understanding of that. And so they do what they're doing under the guise that what they're doing is just and normal. If we as a community don't discredit that kind of mindset, then we encourage that kind of mindset to be inculcated in the minds of our young people, and we should not be surprised when they do counterproductive or destructive things because we fail to grasp the problem of socialization. Socialization is a very difficult concept for a lot of people to grasp, but clearly, you know, people are akin to a computer. What you put into computers, what you get out of computer. People are the same way. Information you put into people is what you're going to get back from people. So if we don't do a better job as community of programming certain information in the mindset of our children, so when they incorporate or accept the norms and tenets of the society, which stresses individualism, selfishness, greed, and avarice, then we should not be surprised that they do so. So we have an obligation to understand that the collective is the only way, collectively is the only way in terms of bringing about a redress in terms of the problems that we're confronted with. In addition to that, we have to have some collective understanding, which is why organization is so important in community in terms of clarifying the situation that we find ourselves confronted with. And I'll close with that.
Thank you, caller 6029. This question is to be addressed by caller 6057. When we look at this phenomena from slavery to sports, prime time and human rights, when we look at Deion Sanders and how they are playing that game with them, parallels with today's reality of how this system, these same forces, these same institutions, whether they educational institutions, social institutions, political institutions, or board directors or stock owners or presidents or universities, they are all connected to a system where they also at the same time, they say they love you, Deion, on one hand, or on the other hand, they are exploiting, using, manipulating Africa, Mother Africa, that are fighting for total control of African resources at the expense of African people. They are using all kinds of forces and tools to maintain economic and political control against the interests and will of African people. There's an ongoing battle going on right now around who will own and control Africa in the future and its resources. And we can look at the behavior of France, England, the U.S., you name it. And these are the same people on one end, inside of these borders of the SNCS, they say, let's work together, while on the other end, they're robbing and raping your mothers, your brothers, and your sisters back home in Africa and throughout the world. So I said to you, caller 6057, are there bigger issues and why there's no discussion on the connections between this question of how they use us as workers inside the United States to exploit and control their wealth, and they do the same thing to us outside of the United States, i.e. Africa, to own and exploit our wealth? Your response to that narrative, caller 6057.
Yes, my response to that narrative is that we are disorganized as a people. What we need is a revolution, an independent political organization guided by a revolutionary ideology, an ideology that guides our actions and would teach us how to behave in a collective setting and how to be organized. And, you know, the problem is the way we treat one another. One of the consequences of that is our educational system is controlled by our enemies. And as long as we're in that situation, and, you know, our oppression will continue. And we cannot find a stop to it because the educational system we're subject to does not give us the solution to our problem. And we have to get better organized, and we have to be guided by revolutionary ideological principles in order to put an end to our oppression and to the end of exploitation by African labor by other forces, as you correctly described it. And it's going to take organization by the masses of our people to bring about a change. And in the meantime, our entertainers will continue to be used to pit us against each other and to spread confusion in our community.
Thank you, caller. We'll make our transition to caller 7236. We'll make our transition to caller 7236. You know, caller, my co-host, Brother Alex, made a statement about the importance or relevance, or maybe we need to look at building our own institutions and conferences. If we have the best coaches, the best players, if they are that valuable, maybe this is the time where we need to re-look at this issue, readdress the issue of why can't we develop and strengthen our own institution? Why develop and strengthen the SEC conference? Why develop and strengthen the Big Ten or the Big 12 and not the CIAA or the SWAT? Your response, caller, so the athletes of that going back home, not home in terms of Hill, I'm saying going back to these institutions that are located here, there's a dominant setup to help so-called African people who attend there. Call
Well, Deion Sanders was doing that, and he had implied that he was going to continue to do that, and he wasn't going to be leaving the HBCUs. And he was on fire. And I think that that's an excellent idea to utilize the HBCUs and the conference. And I'm sorry, I don't know the name of the football conference, but I know that Saunders, as when working for HBU, we thought that he, you know, he had said he wasn't going to leave, and that he was, and he said he was about the money, and now he's worth $40 million, and he's in Colorado, where this cowboy has, you know, making money for Colorado, but certainly addressing the issue of coaches marketing the schools and working with Sanders and finding out and from him how he accomplished what he did, and reapplying that metrics in another HBU or other HBUs, and developing a network and marketing them is what it should be about for us as we begin to move our children forward and our grandchildren and our future generations, because one of the best places for Africans to receive an education, born in America or in any other place abroad, is at the HBCUs. And that's whether it's this, Howard, Bowie State, wherever, it's the place for higher education for our people, and definitely we should be building economic network around sports, because sports is so essential to the cultural paradigm in the United States. And football, basketball in particular, and soccer is growing and has a growing audience as well. So yes, definitely we should be focusing on working with the historically black colleges and universities. Thank you.
Thank you, Carla. You're listening to MPH Radio. It's a biweekly program that comes on every other Saturday. Our next program will be on the 30th of September. It's under the banner of the organization Missing Pages of History, Inc., which is a 501(c) organization. We encourage all our viewers, our listeners, our supporters and friends, and those who want to join us, you can do that by emailing us. You can email us right at mphradio@yahoo.com. If you'd like to become a contributor, you'd like to become a supporter, if you'd like to become an active member, we can use all skills, all ideas, and all labor to help build this institution. After all, it's an institution for the community, for the people, for humanity. We can be no greater, no bigger than the role that you are willing to play. We need your help. We need your support. We need your membership. Come help us increase our listenership. The next couple of months, we're going to reach at least over the band of 100,000 people in listenership. You only can do that by you spreading the word, sharing our program. If you would like to have a link to this program or any other program, please just email us at mphradio@yahoo.com. We can send you that link. If you'd like to make a contribution to us, you can do that as well. You can do that by going to Zelle and sending to Missing Pages of History 1, suzelle@yahoo.com. That's Suzelle. Or you can put a check or money order to Miss and Pedro History, Inc., P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. We greatly thank you for your support, but like always, we need your ideas, we need your energy, we need your neighbor. Come and support us. So what we're going to do right now, we'd like to remind everyone also that on the weekends from Friday through Sunday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night, you can hear some of our throwback TV programs by going to Comcast on Channel 95 or going to Verizon on Channel 36 at 1 p.m. and view the programs. Spread the word. So at this point in time, this is the voice of MPH Radio. We're going to a station break, and when we come back, we'll ask all of our participants their final thoughts on the on this particular topic today, from slavery to sports, crime time, and human capital. We'll be right back with their final thoughts and a message to the community from Brother Alex. This is MPH Radio.
Choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you had your white teacher?
Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? If you had a choice of colors.
That's right. If you had a choice of color, which one would you choose? Yeah, which one would you choose? Which one's right or wrong? Well, do they have to be a choice? Well, that is the million-dollar question. Welcome back to the MPH Radio. Before we go into our final thoughts from our participants today on the theme from slavery to sports, crime time and human capital, I would just like to quickly remind our people and the rest of the world a little aspect of some of our history that took place on this day, on the 16th. And on this particular day, in terms of our history, on this particular day, we just remind everybody that Claude A. Barnett, founder of Associated Negro Press, born in 1889. Right, Claude A. Barnett, founder of Associated Negro Press, was born in 1889. So from that note right now, we can go into our final thoughts on this theme, and we're going to come to our caller and our participant. Call 4298. Your final thoughts on that theme, from slavery to sports, prime time and human capital.
Let me just say, I have my mind on my people and my people on my mind. The capitalism is the system of socialized production, private appropriation. We're talking about real capitalism. We're talking about the big corporations. We're talking about, you know, the big automakers, and where the people could actually function without that corporate board. I mean, without that profit driven system, they could actually run that company. The workers themselves could run the company, and so that's something to be considered. We're a system where the surplus labor, the socialized appropriation is part of the state government, and it's fed back into the people through free education, free health care, and other services. And so this is scientific socialism. This is strictly a business model, ultimately. You know, the 5 and 10 employees and all these little capital petty bourgeoisie institutions, I mean, their function will be different under socialized production and socialized appropriation, because the free education, the free health care, the people will be politicized, highly conscious of themselves and self-determined, and not just automatons with dead-end jobs, rich getting richer and poor getting poorer. It'd be a different world, and a different world is possible, and that's what we're struggling for. The party makes people conscious, but socialism is built by the masses, and the masses alone make history. Thank you.
Thank you, Carla, for your contribution to today's program. We next will go to caller 7236. Caller 7236. Your final thoughts for today's program.
Well, I agree with the last caller, but in particular, all the callers. Deion Sanders is considered like one of the most versatile, quote unquote, and successful athletes ever, simply because he played in the Super Bowl and the World Series, because he was a football player and a baseball player. They allege that he's a musician, a rapper, a sports commentator. We know that. And now he's a football coach. He's also credited with being an author. And, you know, he does so many things. But in a socialist economy, there would be others, and the purpose is right now is to focus on the auto workers and the struggle that they're having and that workers are having across this country, and the fact that unions are on the rise. And as Sister Susie had said, like, what is he saying to the children? What kind of profile is he? Does he have a plan and a structured lecture or curriculum when he speaks to young people, because certainly they're impressed with the fact that he's worth millions of dollars. But how does that translate into the lives of the people that he speaks to and meets, other than their admiration and their respect for his economic success in a wage slave system? So we have to hope that he has a structured system that he is able to take and have professionals pull together talking points for him and utilize them to communicate with others to help the advancement of our people and all people and the working class people who admire him. Because I don't think there are a bunch of billionaires or millionaires coming out to see Dion. I think that it is the average working class person. And what impact is he having on the indigenous African community in Colorado and the surrounding area, other than wearing a cowboy hat and that kind of thing? So thank you for another very interesting and successful show. I had not, I am really impressed with the shows and the content of the shows, and thank all of the analysts and to you, Brother Robinson, for this fine show, and to Sister Susie, Alex, and all the other wonderful callers. Thank you, and thank you for having me. Good afternoon.
The only thing I'd like to say is one thing, one positive thing that Deion Sanders is doing. He's giving the kids direction, and on top of that, he's making them have corrections. So that way, when you have this structure, then there's nothing but positive things that can come out of it. Thank you.
Caller, sorry for the delay. You're going to call the 6057. Your final thoughts.
Final thought is that we're getting paid while the ruling bourgeoisie is getting paid, and the only way to end to that problem is permanent organization. We must join an organization guided by revolutionary ideology, will give our people the correct way to go. And I thank you for having me on the program tonight.
And thank you, Carl, as well, for your final thoughts on today's program, From Slavery to Sports, Prime Time, and Human Capital. Final thoughts from caller 6029. Final thoughts, 6029, the mic is yours.
Yeah, well, I think it's sort of self-evident, you know, just from the discussion today, that the situation confronting, you know, African people in society is are perilous. And such, you know, one of the things that, you know, as conditions of oppression changes, what I find ironic is that our response to those conditional changes is either non-existent or insufficient in terms of keeping up with the complexity of strategies employed by those in positions of power to ensure their will prevail. So it seems to me, you know, as a community, one of the things we have to dismiss. We have to dismiss this notion that, in fact, capitalism is our friend. I think to the extent that we embrace capitalism is our friend. I think it sort of underscores why we engage in such counterproductive, very disadvantageous kinds of behaviors, thinking that somehow what we're doing is good for us because we're quote-unquote citizens. So when we talk about this urgency confronting the African community and society, you know, I certainly hope that we begin those philosophical discussions, you know, irrespective of political ideology. Because one of the things, you know, I strongly believe is that, you know, when we talk about in terms of bringing about change in society, it's going to take a multitude of ideologies in terms of bringing about change. I don't think any particular ideology is going to bring about the kind of change that we seek. So in that context, we have to have philosophical unity in terms of moving forward. And, of course, that philosophical unity is going to encompass a lot of the ideology, political ideologies that exist, you know, throughout the world. But having said that, I simply want to thank you for having me today, and you have a good day, sir.
Thank you, Carla, for your participation and your contribution to today's program. And we're going to get the final thoughts from Brother Alex, my co-host. Brother Alex, your final thoughts on From Slavery to Sports, Prime Time, and Human Capital. The mic is yours, Brother Alex.
All right. Well, thank you again. And again, it's been a wonderful discussion because this is a discussion that we had to have. So thank you, Mr. Lee, for first bringing it to us and then for the panelists to give up their opinions and their thoughts and give us some things to ponder and to think about and to discuss among ourselves this week. And I just hope, you know, their viewers to pass this show on to their friends and family because this is something that needs to be talked about. You know, in the African-American community, we've always had very few things to be proud of. So when the African community learned that the first heavyweight champion was Jack Johnson, followed by Joe Louis, followed by, we'll go as far as Muhammad Ali. We'll go into basketball with Wilt Chamberlain and all the way to Michael Jordan. We'll go into football and we'll say Doug Williams, first black Super Bowl champion. Until Patrick Mahomes. So when we look at the greatness of the black athletes, regardless of what the sport, and I'm so sorry for leaving out the great Jackie Robinson. So once we look into what we have as a people and who we have supported, and these gentlemen, these were not the greatest men of our society. They did not push us forward. They did not put us over any unseen thought that we would be first-class citizens in this country. They were paid by capitalist owners who gave them good salaries and some of them not so good salaries. But they were paid by men who bet on their livelihood. And the African community, we supported them. Dion was something different. He came in with a do-rag and a bandana. He came in with a lot of flash and a lot of heavy talk, and he backed it up. See, we hadn't seen nobody like him for an athlete track as well as football and baseball. Hadn't seen nobody like Dion, not at all. Coaches hadn't seen nobody like him. Owners hadn't seen nobody like him. The public hadn't seen nobody like Dion Sanders because he played both sides of the ball, and he also played baseball. But when that day when he ran out of the combine and he said, I'm done, again, nobody had seen nobody like Deion Sanders. So we also have to look at there was another part of Deion and a bad part that comes to almost any great athlete because he even decided to end his life with suicide at one point. And that was because power, women, drugs, different things like that, they were surrounding him and clothing him in because he had friends that had problems, failed marriages that he had to pay a lot of money out in divorce, and he had owners that even though they paid him a lot, his agents, lawyers, and everybody else was on the take. So when you're confronted with so many things, then who do you turn your life to? Dion turned his life to Christ, became a Christian. Now to say, was it a better Dion before or not, I'm not the one to judge Dion. I never will. But I will hold him accountable in the position that he's in, because he's in the position to say that the next one that comes up that we give the reins to, will he be like Dion, calling his own shots? And do we know if Dion is calling his own shots? But that's the most important thing, is making sure that you have the confidence in yourself to also speak up for your community, as Dion has many times before. And, you know, being a member of NAACP and different organizations, he's never denied a request, you know, to be on our side of the table. So I can't say that he's one that has turned his back on us, just like so many other athletes I can't even talk to. And it's just ridiculous that they won't do any work in the community or whatever. But we do have a lot of athletes that do work in the community and for the community, and especially for the Boys and Girls Club of America. So I have to congratulate all these men for doing an excellent job as an athlete. Whether they follow in Dion's footsteps or whose, it don't matter, because they should follow in their own footsteps and giving back to their communities and making sure that not only they get an opportunity to go to these major Division I schools or Division II schools, but also other African Americans are hired at these schools. You know, it's a lot to be considered a role model and what we should be like in life, because we will always be judged by someone else. But our greatest judge is ourselves. If Dion doesn't do what Dion wants to do, he won't be Dion. He'll be who you want him to be, but he won't be himself. So I close with that. And again, I thank you, Mr. Lee. This has been a wonderful show. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Alex. At this point in time, we're going to take a quick station break. And when we take our break, we're going to take a break with the idea of appreciating our mothers. When you talk about all these athletes and sons and daughters who are participating in arena sports, many times the mothers and the family members don't get their proper credit. And a lot of times, sometimes we get overwhelmed and be misdirected and don't acknowledge the role and contribution that our mothers have played, our community have played, society has played to make us who we are. So anyway, you will play this song, Dear Mother, in honor of the athletes, mothers. And when we come back, I will have my two cents worth, and Brother Alex will give his message to the community, and we'll close out with some uplifting music. That's our order for the remaining of this time period. So we'll go to our station break, and we'll come back. My final thoughts and Alex's message to the community. You're listening to MPH Radio.
When I was pregnant in jail, I thought I was going to have a baby and the baby would never be with me, but I was acquitted a month and 3 days before Tupac was born. I was real happy because I had a son.
When I was young, me and my mama had beef, 17 years old, kicked out on the street. So back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, scared to go home. I was a fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Said tears with my baby sister. Over the years, we was poor than us, a little kid. And even though we had different daddies, the same drama when things went wrong, we blamed mama. I reminisce on the stress I caused. It was hugging on my mama from a jail cell. Thinking elementary, hey, I see the penitentiary one day, running from the police, that's right, mama catch me, put a whoop into my backside, and even as a queen, mama, you always was a black queen, mama, I finally understand, for a woman it ain't easy, trying to raise a man, you always was committed, a poor single mother on welfare, tell me how you did it, there's no way I can pay you back. But the plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it.
Baby, don't you know we love you, sweetie?
Dear mama.
Baby, please tell us it was fair. No love for my daddy cause the coward wasn't there. He passed away and I didn't cry cause my anger wouldn't let me feel for a stranger. They say I'm wrong and I'm heartless, but all along I was looking for a father, he was gone. I hung around with the thugs, and even though they showed a young brother love, I moved out, started really hanging. I needed money of my own, so I sang it. I ain't guilty, cause even though I said it feels good putting money in your mailbox, I love paying rent when the rent's due. I hope you got the diamond necklace that I sent to you, cause when I was low, you was there for me. You never left me alone because you cared for me. And I can see you coming home after work late. You're in the kitchen trying to fix us a hot plate. You're just working with the scraps you was given. And mama made miracles every Thanksgiving. But now the road got rough, you're alone. Trying to raise two bad kids on your own. And there's no way I can pay you back. But my plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it.
Baby, don't you know we love you, sweetie?
And dear mama,
baby, there's no one above you, sweetie.
You all appreciate it.
Baby, don't you know we love you?
Pour out some liquor and I reminisce. Cause through the drama I can always depend on my mama. And when it seems that I'm hopeless, you say the words that can get me back in focus. When I was sick as a little kid, to keep me happy, there's no limit to the things you did. And all my childhood memories are full of all the sweet things you did for me. And even though I act crazy, I gotta thank the Lord that you made me. There are no words that can express how I feel. You never kept a secret, always stayed real. And I appreciate how you raised me and all the extra love that you gave me. I wish I could take the pain away. If you can make it through the night, there's a brighter day. Everything will be alright if you hold on. It's a struggle every day, gotta roll on. And there's no way I can pay you back. But my plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it.
Don't you know we love you,
dear mama.
We'd like to welcome back to MPH Radio as your host, the voice of MPH Radio. We're closing out this particular program on the 16th day of September, 2023, titles From Slavery to Sports, Prime Time, and Human Capital. I just would like to remind the listening audience and the rest of the world that when it comes to the conditions of African people and oppressed people around the world, we must always be conscious and aware of deception, distractions. We must always keep our eyes on the prize. For us, it's our total freedom, our total liberation, the freedom of Africa and African people throughout the world, and the advancement of a free humanity. So when we look at these issues that others define what is important, we must understand that is their perspective, that is their interest, that is their desire, but don't make it become your interest, your perspective, and your desires. This is one of the warnings and issues we must look at and learn from the so-called prime time phenomenon. The system is using it again as a tool for its advantage to maintain its power, maintain its domination over you, your people, humanity. At this stage, there's a crucial battle that is ongoing in Africa, where again, there is a lunch, there is a huge fight that has been continuing for over the last 5, 6, 7 years on who will own and control Africa. That is the primary fight where we must keep our eyes on. It is that fight that will determine whether or not if we're going to be respected, be free, and be a human being who will be giving the beings to be all that we can be. So on that note, let's always remember, we don't want to never be in a position where we are getting played while others are getting paid. This has been MPH Radio. Remind everyone to join us in 2 weeks on the 30th of September, 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. At the same time, we ask you to come and join us, support us, help build this institution. For the next couple months or so, we want to at least reach the clip of over 100,000 viewership. And we only can do this through your help, through your support. And if you'd like to have a link to this program and others, please email us at mphradio@yahoo.com. If you'd like to support us financially and make a donation or show your love, you can do that by sending a check or money order to Missing Pages History, Inc., P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. Or you can mail us at Missing Pages of History 1@yahoo.com. So until next time, like always, we're going to close this program out with a message to the community from my co-host, Brother Alex, and then leave you with some inspiring music with a message. Brother Alex, close us on out with your message.
Again, Mr. Lee, it's been a wonderful program. Made me think of a lot, and, you know, it's just one of those programs that sometimes, you know, have to get your mind off of things, because we in life sometimes associate ourselves with so many troubles. We have so many injuries and different things, and, you know, we go through so much in life until we need a program like this where we can actually involve ourselves and commit our minds, you know, to deeper thought than we thought that was within us. And with that deeper thought, you know, today I have been inspired. I really truly have. And I came up with something, you know, a little bit not in quite relationship with the show, but always, you know, hopefully inspiring, you know, to the listeners. Because I have tried over the course of my life to stand for something, to knock on doors that I knew were intentionally closed to me, to start conversations with people who did not care to talk or listen to me, to go places where I was not wanted or accepted, to ask some people why and why not. I sought to become a rebel rouser, an outside agitator, and just a general troublemaker. I felt it as my calling, something inspired by my faith as a child and the conditions that my parents and grandparents were living under. To me, it was just not as black and white as the TV was in those days. No, something else was behind this keeping of the people apart. I never learned to be a racist or bigot from my parents. The state buildings, the city parks, the separated schools, the segregated hospital, the local newspaper, the county courthouse, and even the local stores we shopped at had signs that told me I was different. They often read, for example, white only. No blacks allowed, no niggers served, colored seating, and no blacks lottery. As a child, how could you fight this? Why this second-class acceptance by some who sought that the Bible, God, and the Constitution was in their favor? Where did they get this foolishness from? I went to a progressive church that had a fiery minister. He not only preached fire and brimstone, and in death, we not only wait to be judged by God, but we must be accountable to each other here in the present life. Love for the family, neighbors, and friends begin at home. How and what we are taught follows us our whole lives, shaping how we will treat each other. The events of life have some bearing, of course, but if we are fundamentally taught equality, we will not stray to inequality. I am so thankful for Cass Merrick, young man who is invited to speak at my church in the 60s, named Leon White, who was a civil rights leader in my community. I had the opportunity to hear young, handsome Benjamin Chavis, a beautiful Angela Davis, and many others who spoke at my church about changing those signs. My minister was not afraid of our church being firebombed as much as the more fluent black churches in the community. They had accepted that we would always be second-class citizens, and they didn't want to rock the boat. They preached to turn the other cheek so it matched the other bloody one of shame. Could they not see and read the signs that said that we were not equal? Yes, it was at a cross that I first saw the light. I saw a cross burning in a field not far from my house, and I knew for whom the meaning was as our schools and communities was being integrated. It was a sight that I will never forget as a young child. What Christians would do such a thing and say they love the Lord Jesus Christ? My step-grandfather told us many stories of slavery days and the days that followed as he grew into a man. One story held me spellbound until today. It was about a slave who tried to hide. He could read. For years, he worked as a buggy driver for his master's son. His mother had been raped by him at 12. When he was told by her mother, she now carried blood every month. That was a sign that a slave child was fertile, and she could now bear a child. Many plantation masters and overseers could not wait to pounce upon the young slave girl and get her with child to provide another slave for sale or future free labor. This was done repeatedly in the South, and many slave women had over 20 children each. Many were fathered by their white masters, the overseers, strangers, breeders, or by their common mates. In the beginning of slavery in this country, the slaves were not allowed to marry because they may form a family bond as they had in their homeland. The plantation owners and the government had to prohibit this bond of trust between a slave man and a woman. Even one freedom was seen as too much for a slave. Being able to read meant the lash or even your life. One day, Jim, who had served his master father well, made a mistake of looking under the buggy seat and found the book. He liked the outside cover as he had pictures on it and the words, freedom for all. He could not read at that point in life, but he knew of a woman who could. She was an old mulatto woman who read the Bible in the fields and swamps at night as she sang and prayed to a God he did not understand. This woman, he felt, he could trust. It was said she knew when the trains came, the human train following the Underground Railroad. Jim was one who never desired to leave his master. He was his son. How could he abandon his father? Jim's home was not with his father in the big house. It was beside the pig slop. His clothes were not new, but hand-me-down. Jim ate the leftovers from the family breakfast and dinner. His shoes were two sizes too big. He was yelled and cursed at like any other slave. But in him, he felt some sort of twisted pride in being of his master's seed. The old mulatto woman taught Jim to read by oil lamp at her shack in the woods at the edge of the plantation. Jim got so good at reading, he began to preach. He never took the Bible with him back to the plantation. He only carried the book he found under the buggy seat. One day, as he waited for his father's return at a neighboring plantation, he got bored and pulled out the book to read. As he read out loud, two overseers crept up behind him and asked, "Boy, what are you doing?" "Looking at the pictures and speaking out loud," Jim replied. "Niggers don't read. That is the law," is what they said. And they bound Jim. He struggled. They beat him with an axe handle and a large rock they found nearby. They tied him up and dragged him behind their horses. Jim's body bounced off the ground and twisted onto his stomach and face. Once they got to the main house where his father was with the plantation owner, they cut him loose and stated his crime. His father spoke first and offered him for sale to save his life. The crime of a Negro reading was death, and all present knew it. The plantation owner decided to buy Jim only one condition. He would put out his eyes and blind him. They held Jim's face on a tree stump and used a wooden fork to jab at Jim's eyes until they bled and he could not see. Jim cried out in pain and wished he was dead. Years later, they set old Jim free, and he went to work at a state school for the blind to do what he could do with his short life that was left. There, Jim was taken in by kind people who learned of the state and taught him to read the blind language of Braille. Jim found a new spirit now, and he preached and preached. He learned of his mother's and his white father's death and many others in the great war between the states over the years. But most of all, he read with his fingers what he could not see with his eyes. He read the Emancipation Proclamation all by himself. He asked at the school library if they had a copy of Freedom for All, and they did. He held the book to his chest and cried out, "I am a man called Jim. I was made in God's image. I can see now when I could not see before. I think of the story now and what blinded me to the truth of what I was to become. My eyes are open now, and I only want to do God's will for my people. Let it be said one day that I gave in my words and heart all I could to help my people out of their blindness of racism and bigotry." And I want to thank you all today for listening. And I love you, family. Thank you, Mr. Lee.
Let's talk Nigeria in the mass hysteria. gonna save the nation. With no support for education. Cause right now it don't make sense. Right now it don't make sense. Let's talk about our part. My heart hurts your heart. Let's talk about, let's talk about living. Had enough of dying, that's what we all about. Let's do more giving, do more forgiving. Yeah, our souls were brought together so that we could love each other. Sister, we are here. We are here for all of us. We are here for all of us. That's why we are here. Why we are here. We are here.
While we are here,